You're listening to Star Wars Beyond the Films, the official expanded universe podcast of StarWarsReport.com.
There is a great disturbance in the Force.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Star Wars Beyond the Films. You're listening to episode number 17 for the month of April 2012. I am one of your hosts, Nathan P. Butler, on this expanded universe podcast. With me this time around, appropriately enough, on an expanded universe podcast, is the defender of the EU, defender of the expanded universe, Mr. Mark Herleman. Hey, Mark, how you doing?
Hey, the Defendor is here. Yes, yes, and Whistler's here, too. We're trying out a new room in the house. You know, since Jane has been born, we've been playing musical studios. I could use my old studio, but it tends to be her changing room, and so I'm trying other rooms out to see if the sound quality is going to work and give it a go. So hopefully it doesn't sound too bad when this is all said and done. I know the last couple episodes when I was editing them, I was hearing a lot of pops, the sound when I was talking. That was because of the whole chaos going on in my studio. I had the mic right up in my lap pretty much, which was obviously too close for someone who's as animated as I am. So hopefully this sounds good and we'll see how it goes.
Now, isn't that a little bit dangerous, the whole musical studios thing? I mean, if you and the baby are going around the same little area and the music stops, don't you run the risk of, like, squashing the baby or something? Or do you just let her win?
Yeah, pretty much. Or getting thrown up on. I mean, that's always a possibility, too.
Oh, see, there you go. I don't need a kid. I got cats. Apparently, I get the same thing. Yeah. Well, folks, our topic this time around is one that is, it's bound to be somewhat controversial, not because the topic itself really is, so much as everybody has the authors out there in the Star Wars EU that they hold dear, and we are going to sort of drop a bomb into some of the things that some of these authors have been involved with. The question we're dealing with this time is whether or not Star Wars publishing, when we're talking about novels in particular, I mean comics too, but novels especially, when we're talking about Star Wars novels, is it better when we have a series slash trilogy slash duology slash whatever that is written by one author, co-authored by different authors working together on the exact same book, or perhaps alternating like they do with Legacy of the Force or Fate of the Jedi, where it's a series by multiple authors where it's essentially playing hot potato or musical keyboards, computer keyboards this time around, yeah, where they actually switch out back and forth. One story, multiple authors, but not really collaboration on a book so much as on a series. And this is going to get into some kind of difficult areas because we got one that just ended. There's some very fan-favorite, somewhat controversial authors who've been involved in the alternating styles before. It's going to be an interesting one. So, Mark, why don't you kick us off here, initial impressions on the topic.
Indeed. And before I do that, I'm going to throw out our contact information. You can listen to our show airing on Middle Earth Network Radio as well as on the Star Wars Report website. Our episodes are also available on our own Facebook page, and that's at SW Beyond Films. You can also find it at SW Beyond Films on Twitter, or just type in Star Wars Beyond the Films in the search bar. No matter how you got here, we'd like you to come and like our page. You know, it's one of the things we interact the most with. It's the best way, I would say, to interact with us. You can post comments while you listen to the show, and you can be heard. I mean, we're doing the feedback stuff. That one should be releasing today or tomorrow at the time of this recording. You know, we're looking forward to your feedback. You know, you guys are keeping us going just as much as we're intriguing you, I hope.
You know, I think I've just outed myself there. I forgot to give the contact information. Mark had to step in and give the contact info. Apparently, I don't want you to hear. We're just recording this so I can hear myself speak. The troll is right.
Nice. So if you have something to say about an episode, fire it off at us. You know, I mean, that's one of the things that we're here for. We're here for you to ponder. And this one, to me, I think this is a big issue for Star Wars EU fans. And I say big because it's one of those things that whether you agree or disagree, the direction of the big series seems to be coming to an end. And that's for one, from my standpoint, I kind of disagree. I think that Del Rey has dropped the ball in the problem. And I think that by going to just standalones and trilogies, that they're kind of missing the point. You know, the big complaint is that series like The New Jedi Order were just too long. And now we've got, you know, 9-book series like Legacy of the Force and Fate of the Jedi, and they've compounded the problem that we haven't gotten away from this issue. But to me, it's like you go back to the New Jedi Order, and I've said this before, it wasn't one big series. It was, but it wasn't. It was a series of standalones, duologies, and trilogies. And that worked. To me, that is the game plan they need to get back to. Not scrapping the big series altogether, but slowing down a bit and treating them like standalones, like the trilogies, the duologies, but having a giant overall arc, like what they did with the New Jedi Order. I mean, imagine Legacy had they done it differently. You know, the Legacy of the Force trilogy. Instead of giving Alston the first book and Karen Travis the second and Denning the third, what if they would have gave Aaron the first three books and Karen the next three and Denning the last three, or swap up the arrangement any other way? But you would have less of what we saw. And what we saw was a lot of, and I'll use Karen Travis as the example here, where Karen brings in Boba Fett and the Mandos, and yet her books in that trilogy were really the only time we're dealing with it, and her books are the only one that kind of deal with the Jedi in a light that's not so favorable, and yet it doesn't quite follow through to the next book in the series, and yet it was supposed to. And I think that was the key problem here, is that disconnect that we have. I mean, you know, I'm a huge fan of the New Jedi Order, but you did not really have that sense of disconnect. At least it didn't feel that way to me. I mean, did that come across like that to you, Nathan? That there was a big disconnect in the New Jedi Order versus the 9-book series we saw later?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, in both cases, you're still dealing with the idea of you're jumping between author styles, but I'm not sure that it was so much an issue where Del Rey shouldn't have done a 9-book series as opposed to, say, 19. I mean, I like the New Jedi Order, and I did like the fact that it was essentially a series made up of smaller series, duologies, these different arcs and whatnot in there. But at the same time, you know, I'm a little bit concerned if they do something that's that large again. You know, I remember the controversy about the New Jedi Order. The people who disliked the New Jedi Order, they gave up on reading any of the New Jedi Order, and that's 19 books, or I guess if they read the first one, 18 books that are part of the publishing line that they just weren't buying, and they're sort of alienating that chunk of fandom. I think smaller series are probably the way to go, but I think you're onto something with the whole idea of doing like a trilogy of trilogies or something like that, although I'm confused. I thought that the books by Karen Travis and Legacy of the Force were a separate series every once in a while. but no, I think you're on the right track there, but I don't think it's so much Del Rey's issue except in picking the authors. Because, and this is where the, you know, I'm going to say something I'm sure is going to tick people off. In reading Star Wars books, I got to be honest with you, most of these authors, I could almost consider them interchangeable. I almost never see enough of a difference in writing style between Star Wars authors for me to be able to pick them out of a crowd. You know, and it's usually, if it's something I could pick out, it's because of something being overdone, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. For instance, if there's a bunch of references in it, it's Jim Lucino. Right? If it's something that's going to have a whole bunch of use of the word criffing all the time, and perhaps the use of the Killix or some kind of vague prophecy that you don't really get an answer to, it's got to be Troy Denning. If you've got Mandalorians all over the place, even if it's not a commando book, it's just a Mando book, they dropped a syllable there, then it's got to be Karen Travis, or would have been back then. If it's Thrawn or Mara Jade or Talon Card or any number of Zahn-created characters doing things that seem to put them in the spotlight and push everyone else back, it's got to be Timothy Zahn. There's a few cases where I can pick them out.
If it's so deep that you have to read it 4 or 5 times, it's probably a Stover book.
Possibly, but I don't know. See, I'd be right there on that right up until Shadows of Mendor, which didn't really jump out at me as much.
Thank you. It did not jump out to me, but everybody treats me like I'm like some like anti-Stover fan for that. And it's like, yeah, I don't know. And I admit, maybe I need to go back and reread it, because Stover's books, the more I reread them, the more I like them. But that one just did not do it for me like Traitor or Return of the Jedi or Revenge of the Jedi. Revenge of the Sith. When I read that one, I mean, every time I go back and read it, there's just something that I missed. And same with Traitor. And yet, I know if I probably went back with Shadows, it would be the same thing, but I don't know. I really don't want to go back.
It's Luke Skywalker and the Shadows of Meh, right? Isn't that the internet jargon I should use?
Yeah.
But no, I think that's the thing. You know, if you've got these authors, or if it's, you know, if it's funny, it's Aaron Alston. When you've got these authors that in a lot of ways don't have something super distinctive about their particular take on Star Wars or their writing style, on the one hand, you could say that's a bad thing because you should be able to pick them out. You should be able to say this is an awesome author because... At the same time, though, if you do have authors who in a lot of ways are interchangeable, they use the same jargon, same general writing style. Like, you don't, for instance, see a lot of stuff written in first person. In a case like that, you get something like Fate of the Jedi, where, granted, I had my issues with where the story started and the lather, rinse, repeat angle of it. But from the standpoint of feeling consistent, to me, Fate of the Jedi feels like it could have just been written by one author. There's nothing distinctive enough between Christy Golden, Troy Denning, and Aaron Alston, except for a few little nuances here and there, to make it feel as though it's disjointed. So, you know, you could do something like Legacy of the Force again.
I would say Denning is probably the one in this case that brings something that's more his style, with, you know, with the clicks and the squibs. You know, he seems to focus on Raynar. You know, the characters, I want to say, from Star by Star seem to be Denning's, like, bread and butter, and a lot of that detail. And that, to me, is the only thing about the last two nine-book series that really – and I think some people – I don't really have this issue yet, but some people might say that era is too Denning thick. And I can see where they're coming from, but it's not what I necessarily ascribe to. My issue, I think, is that I would rather see Denning in the middle position – than having him in the end. When it came to Dark Nest, I felt like the third book in that series retconned the first two books. And yet, as I'm going with Legacy of the Force, or Fate of the Jedi, I keep having that feeling like things are being retconned, things that we've established before and then reestablished are being reestablished once again.
So maybe that's the truth behind it all. Maybe it wasn't... Was it Christian Taylor, I think, was the guy's name? Maybe it wasn't that something went off the rails in the Mortis trilogy on the Clone Wars where the last episode broke the rules of the previous two. Maybe it was Denning ghostwriting the thing. Just possibly. But no, I think you're right in the sense that, you know, he has some unique elements to him. A lot of people refer to him as kind of a bad closer. I don't necessarily see him as a bad closer, but he is much more, I think, about closing off specific plot lines and specific character payoffs more so than he is, I'm going to tie up every loose end. And, you know, I think what makes that difficult is if you look at the series as a whole, it leaves a lot of loose ends. But some of those loose ends are actually ones that are at least generated, if not generated, then at least perpetuated by the other two authors. So maybe it's sort of one of those things where, you know, they're setting up the payoff and yet he doesn't necessarily come and get it. It's kind of like, you know, bases are loaded bottom of the ninth, but the person comes up and just, you know, does a quick bunt and you get one run instead of getting the grand slam that you might have been able to. I get that from being in Bravestown. Brave City. But I think when it comes to these, if we dig it down, you know, if we go kind of to that original question of a series written by one person versus co-authors versus the alternating thing, It depends on the approach you want to take. If it's one story, I think that, yeah, you probably need the one author thing. What we're actually doing the rotating thing right now for Wars. I mean, that's what the whole Wars, the Battle of Phobos novella series that we're doing right now is. It's nine books, and in this case, you've got two books by me, two books by Sabrina Fry, two by Jim Perry, two by Sean E. Williams, and then one by Josh Radke. And in that case, though, what we have is that, for the most part, you'll find that of the... It's like a trilogy of trilogies. It's three different factions, and within each faction, you're really only tending to see two books by one person and one book by the other. So we're limiting that whole swapping back and forth. But it's something we've had to deal with. You know, how do you make it feel like a consistent universe? What kind of phrases, like we introduced in my second novella, On Red Soil, the term Marsian instead of Martian, M-A-R-S-I-A-N. And that's just something that, if it's used across the books, can keep everything feeling consistent, as long as the editor's also, you know, pushing that way. So there's a strength to do that. There's a strength in the whole alternating thing if you can coordinate well, but if you don't coordinate well, it falls apart. What I find more of kind of an open question tends to be this whole issue of one author versus co-authors, because I honestly can't tell a difference. You know, like, I couldn't really tell a big difference between, say, the Jedi Academy trilogy by Kevin J. Anderson or Kevin and Rebecca Moesta, his wife's books in Young Jedi Knights, other than the age group that it's aiming for. I'm not sure I'd be able to tell you the difference between a book where Steve Perry is on his own or teamed up with someone, or Michael Reeves versus Michael Reeves and Maya Catherine Bonhoff. I'm not sure that I could pick that out. So, well, see, it almost feels, yeah, it's like an unanswerable question.
I'm going to agree, but at the same time, like, when I think of Shadow Games, I definitely at times got the sense when Maya was writing. It seemed, because I've read a couple of my wife's romance smut books, and I just kind of had that feel, like I could tell when she was writing, because the details behind what the characters were thinking really kind of went more towards what I was accustomed to reading when I was reading my wife's books. You know, they were really focusing on the feelings and what the other person was thinking and things like that. And then there were other parts of the book that didn't really even think about that or address it at all. And so I kind of started to feel like, okay, well, I could kind of get a feel for when I was reading the other person's kind of part in the book. But at the same time, I do see where you're saying, you know, where it gets hard to tell with certain authors. I think it's easier for me or you because we've read so many of these books. But yeah, for a casual reader, I don't think you are going to notice.
Now, do you think that usually is what happens with these co-written books? Because that's one of the things that's always been intriguing to me, because I've never co-written anything. Everything I've done, you know, we've collaborated on the series aspect of it. When I wrote for Tales, I had a chance to, you know, collaborate back and forth, getting questions back and forth with Jeremy Barlow, sometimes getting questions, you know, answered higher up the food chain and whatnot. But that's still collaboration where it's almost like you're the writer and there's all these other things that are inputs coming to you. When we see these co-authored books, do you think that's what they do? They tend to, like, separate – I mean, I don't know how you do it. Do they separate out the writing duties where it's more like, okay, well, you do the dialogue mainly for this character. I'll do the one for this. You know, I always thought of it more as one person is, like, the main writer and the other one is the embellisher or the polisher. I mean, would you expect to have maybe different chapters written by different authors, even if it's all going to be credited under their names together? I'm not even sure how I would approach something like that.
That brings up good points, because I did a short story with a friend of mine in the past, and that's how we did it, was every other chapter. You know, I'd go home and I'd write a chapter and I'd give it to him, he'd read up, and then he'd write the next chapter and we'd bounce back and forth. And in that regard, the story evolved as we wrote it. But, you know, I think this gets to a heart of what a lot of people are having a problem with, is the planning. I mean, you know, I do think it's easier for one author, if he was writing a trilogy of books, to know what's going on from start to finish because he's got it all in his head. Now, when you're dealing with three authors, I see it being an opportunity for plots to get left behind, forgotten, character backgrounds completely left out. I mean, there's definite multiple ways you could go about doing it. But I do think the key here, like what I think what we saw in the New Jedi Order, is having the communication and letting people know what's going on. And for me, I think the big failing with Legacy of the Force was, and I don't know if this is true or if this is just a fandom thing, but I remember a lot of people feeling like Denning and Travis were not getting along, and that Travis would write things up and then Denning would just completely ignore him or change the way that they were going to be. And I think that, you know, if that was the case, or even the fact that it was perceived that that was the case, kind of hurts the integrity of the story. Whereas, like, with the New Jedi Order, you know, we kept hearing about the Bible. You know, they were talking about how they had their Bible going on and you know, their secret meetings and this, that, and the other thing. And yet, you know, we hear with you know, Legacy or Fate of the Jedi, how they didn't even have Abel's figured out yet. And that, to me, is a big concern. When you don't have your villain figured out and you've got multiple authors writing this, you know, if the publisher doesn't even know what you want to do with the villain and you're giving it to three different authors, they could easily go off in different directions with this. And I think to a degree that that's kind of what we're seeing. It's like, you know, how unlimited powerful is Ablith? Well, I don't know. It depends on which book you're reading, and you know. And to me, I think that's like a heart of the issue with why they're going away from that, is because that planning wasn't there, that you know, the people reading it kind of feel like, oh, well, I don't want a big series like that. It's just too drug out. And I think it was drug out because there was a lack of planning going in. There was a lot of rehashing things that we didn't have to rehash, or things that should have been rehashed that people, you know, because I'm having a problem with, by the time the next book comes out, I'm like, man, okay, what happened in that last book? And I got to go back and kind of brief myself on it, because it seems like it's been that long since the last one came.
Yeah, and I think when you're talking about the planning angle here, I mean, I'm with you on the whole thing with Abeloth. That blew my mind when we find out that they hadn't actually decided what and who Abeloth was and what her background was until partway through the series. Partly because the information they drew from was something that they had no idea existed yet. But at the same time, it's kind of a, really? That's not something you plan out on, like, day one when you're making these planning sessions at first?
And Lamia, you know, like you mentioned last episode, how we have this wealth of background information on her, and they just kind of mined it for a bit and a piece here, which they could have really, you know, fleshed that character out just by using some references to the old stories. They didn't have to give you the old stories, just a reference here and a reference there as to, you know, why the relationship between her and Luke was so tenebrous as it was. I mean, there was a lot of missed opportunity there that I think could have made the villains in that last series more strong. And now I'm at the point where, as I'm finishing Apocalypse, I'm really feeling like Jason's story was completely copped out and thrown off to the side. I mean, I'm not halfway through the book yet, but I'm just kind of like, I really feel like they had a plan going in, and somewhere in darkness they just said, well, let's just say forget the plan and let's just make stuff up as we go.
Oh, well, at least as far as Fate of the Jedi, absolutely. They have taken the idea in Fate of the Jedi of let's find out why Jason turned and turned it into like a little footnote pretty much at this point. That, if nothing else, that was the only thing that was propelling the story to begin with, and then they just got lost in the weeds somewhere with something else. The thing that sticks to me when it comes to this idea of having the longer stories based on what you're talking about with planning, I think it may be even easier to a degree to plan out something that's giant as opposed to something smaller because of how the payoffs happen. I mean, you have to make sure that, first of all, I mean, obviously each story has to have its own payoff, its own climax. Each book needs to be satisfying in and of itself. And that's an issue whether it's a huge saga, small saga, trilogy, single book, whatever. But when you've got something like New Jedi Order that's spanning several years, you know that some of these stories are in some cases months apart, then it's easier to do something in one book and not have to worry about in another book because, yeah, quite a bit of time has passed. If you've got a series like Fate of the Jedi, Legacy of the Force, things are happening in such a compressed time frame, you know, 9 books, and whether it's 2 years, 3 years, whatever, it seems like they'd be nicely spaced out, but they cover so much ground that when a story plot line is laid out in one book, it must be picked up in the next one. Or if there's a new plot line that's going to be started in a particular book, the foundations for that have to be laid by somebody else in a previous book. And that's where I think that a trilogy by one author especially has leaps and bounds more potential, I guess, than one of these series that's larger with a lot of alternating, because the author knows what he or she is writing. The author can lay in those little bits of foreshadowing, those little side references, those allegories that build over time, the historical references that you see the parallels continue and never get derailed because some other author picked it up. I mean, I would wonder what Fate of the Jedi would have been if, as you said, maybe it could have been a trilogy of trilogies where each person gets three, but they're three back to back. You know, imagine how much depth we could have gotten with the vision that Jason had, what it meant, who it was, who on earth it is that appears at one point in the book, though I know you haven't finished the book, so I'm not going to say who, but you know, you put all that stuff together, imagine the depth we could have gotten with the metaphysical stuff if Denning had had books back to back to deal with it. Instead, it's like it becomes a big point every third book. And the other books, it's not that they ignore it, they just aren't as deeply invested in it as Denning himself is, and Denning's got all the nuances to it. Although I gotta say, to have Denning turn around and say, well, about the character that appears near the end of Apocalypse, even I'm not sure exactly who that is. I've got a guess of who it is, but when fans are out there saying we think it's so-and-so, and he's like, maybe, it kind of depends, that's insane. That's like the whole thing with Abeloth. And I hope that in these interviews they're being a little bit tongue-in-cheek, because if they're being literal about the way this stuff was planned out or is planned out, I want to start pulling my hair out. You know, really. Not just to get rid of the grays, but pull it out.
I have to agree with you. It is frustrating when you hear that, because I think of Drew Karpyshyn when he wrote The Bane, you know, and we find out where it gets to the end, and it's like, well, did he or didn't he die? I don't know. Could it be? Couldn't be. And, you know, I was like, what I'm saying, I like it spelled out. I really don't like it when they leave things open. I don't mind if you're going to do it for a short period of time, but give me my spell out down the road, you know? Milk it out for as long as you want, but at least have an answer for me. Don't let the fans sit there and go at each other, because they are. Maybe not on the forum you're at, but somewhere they're going at each other.
I would take those types of answers. You know, I mean, maybe they leave something deliberately vague, like leaving the vision vague. But if you're going to leave something vague, in a lot of cases, it's almost like you need it to be something that is so ethereal, so hard to grasp anyway, that, you know, it's not something where an easy, hard and fast answer can exist. But if it's like, who was this character? Yeah, that type of thing you would expect to have some type of concrete answer on. If you're going to go into the origins of Abeloth, have the origins planned out ahead of time. What it winds up feeling like to me is a lot like the same thing we got on the DVD for, I guess it was season 3 of The Clone Wars. And I've mentioned this on the show before, where basically what we got was, you want to know the secrets of Mortis? Well, here's a little thing. Here's a little behind-the-scenes thing on the Blu-ray called Secrets of Mortis. And you go to it, and it's literally, you'll notice there's not a documentary about Mortis on the Blu-ray. And we're like, isn't this what I'm watching? That's because George just doesn't want to spell it all out. Great. Thanks. Leaving something ambiguous? Fine. Hopefully something a little more ethereal. But to leave something ambiguous and then turn around and flat out pretty much admit either, because we're not going to tell you, or the flip side of, because we don't have a freaking idea, that's insane. it's like flipping the bird to the fans. You know, if you're going to not spell it out, leave it a mystery. If you're going to spell it out, great, and please have a plan for it. But don't.
Well, yeah, like yo, they say flat out, you know, we're not going to tell you that right now. I mean, and that's, I agree that it is a frustrating thing. And I think with those that really dislike the longer series, I could see where they're coming from in the aspect of, I get confused waiting for the next book to come out and reading other books in between time. So in that regard, it would be nice to have smaller series, or at least put your series closer together. You know, I mean, if you're going to do like a 6-book series, don't spread it out 3 years with 5 other book series coming in between that time. Complete that series, or maybe have like 2 or 3 series going at a time instead of 4 or 5, you know, I mean, shorten that up, but give us more books in that time, but shorten the release dates. So by the time you get to the one, you know, you're not waiting a whole year for the next book. You know, I mean, that was always something that just drove me nuts when I had to buy the paperbacks. You know, I was waiting for that. You had to wait that whole year and all that other stuff, try not to get spoiled. It's like, oh, come on. But I have to admit, though, if you're sitting there and you're looking at 19 books and you got the first one, you're like, all right, I want the next one. And you're like, man, really? I got to wait 4 years before this book series is over? That's a little insane. I can admit it. As much fun as the New Jedi Order 19 book series was of a ride, when I think about how long it was, I could see how that could be daunting. But like I said, don't look at it like that. Look at it as a era set with a bunch of little standalones, trilogies, duologies. In that regard, I think they did it right, and I would love to see them go back to that styling of having a direction, you know, and it gets back to what they're saying with Abeloth and all that, man. It does not, and for me, I feel like I'm reading that. It does not feel like there is a direction going on. I feel just as lost as the Jedi when it comes to what is Abeloth, what's going on with Abeloth. And I'm on the last book. It's like I would really love some answers about now, even if it's from Abeloth's point of view.
It's like we sort of need to have, you know, we need the best of both worlds. We don't need something so sprawling that it's hard to market it, and if someone doesn't like it, they're going to virtually abandon the franchise. But at the same time, we need the ability for these to be a little bit more cohesive. Almost like, I guess, to take the trilogy of trilogies idea, another approach that could be a trilogy of trilogies for a 9-book series, if they were to go that route again someday. They say they're not, but if they were to, hypothetically, maybe not be author number 1 writes books 1, 2, and 3. Then the next one writes 4, 5, 6. The next one writes 7, 8, 9, which in and of itself helps them have their own payoff, their own acts, if you take a 3-act approach to the whole thing. But maybe do have it alternate, but not have it alternate with the same characters. I mean, more or less, that's what we got with Karen Travis with Legacy of the Force. She focused massively on Boba Fett and the Mandalorians, and none of the other authors really did. If she would have just been, say she'd excised out all the stuff that's Mandalorian and maybe a little bit others with some other character or a couple of characters, she could have written a trilogy about those characters that takes place in parallel to or tied into 2 other series, one about the Big 3, maybe one from the New Jedi Order's point of view, maybe one that's from the Imperial point of view, whatever. But you could have a 9-book series that, like with the factions in Wars, really didn't mean for it to wind up like to make it a parallel to that. I just kind of realized it as I was saying it. But in a sense, you have, you know, if you prefer one group of characters, follow that trilogy. If you prefer another group of characters, follow that trilogy. If you want to see it all, follow the entire thing. Because that's kind of what you could do with the New Jedi Order. You know, you could read just the hardbacks. It'd be hard to understand everything, but you could have. Or you could read the Jedi Eclipse, Agents of Chaos stuff, and get a solid story out of those two books. You'll want more. You'll need to know a little bit more about where it's coming from. But those in and of themselves felt like a story. It's almost like we're giving an idea here that, from the standpoint of Star Wars writing, it's the opposite of the usual maxim, right? The maxim is always, you know, two heads are better than one, you know, strength in numbers. It seems like when it comes to authors, it's the other way around. We get more cohesive stories, stories with more of a distinctive style, and the ones that give us a chance to have more foreshadowing, depth, themes, and so forth, when it's one author in a single book or in their own trilogy or series, than if you have something where you have multiple cooks in the kitchen, even if they're all very brilliant cooks. I mean, Karen Travis, love or hate her, what she did well. It's just that some people didn't like that she went in that direction at all. Aaron Alston with the humor, same thing.
For me, it's two sides with the Karen Travis. You got some that are like, well, she was just writing her Mandos and she was doing her own thing. But at the same time, it's like those other two authors were also just as equally guilty of ignoring her part of the story. I mean, I enjoyed the Mando aspect of it, and I was bummed when the next author would come in and that whole plot was just left hanging wide open. And I would almost dare say the same thing with Aaron's stuff with Wedge. It was like Wedge's story just kind of dropped off when Karen picked up. And, you know, maybe they did need to go to a different way. I think that's where I'm really irritated with Del Rey, with their statement of we're not going to do another large series. It's like, well, you did a great one, New Jedi Order. Then you did the three-book series, Darkness, which was all right. You had one author doing that. And then you did your nine-book series with the three authors. It didn't work that great. I mean, the story was all right, but people did not like it. And then you go and you do the exact same thing? And because that failed, you're going to throw it all out the door? I mean, like, we're sitting here, we're what, not even 30 minutes into our podcast, we've come up with different ways you could do the same series and have a different result? I mean, they didn't even think outside the box. They're like, oh, we'll just put the same three authors in a new lineup. Oh, Karen Travis is gone. Let's stick someone else in her slot. Let's not rotate it up or anything.
See, I gotta disagree to a degree because I really liked Legacy of the Force. Legacy of the Force is probably my favorite Star Wars novel series as a whole because I like to see the transformation of Jason and Ben and sort of that tug of war between what's right versus what is legal or what's moral versus what can be made socially acceptable and that sort of thing. But it's going back to that example you gave of Dark Nest, you're very kind to Dark Nest compared to me. I thought that trilogy was absolute garbage. I could not stand Dark Nest. I read it only because of the timeline, and I do not ever want to have to read those books again. I really dislike them, which goes back to the issue of it's not just a matter of having solid, you know, or having a good plan, you know? I was saying how, you know, it seems like things don't work out as well when there's so many cooks in the kitchen for something like Fate of the Jedi. Even though you've got some good authors, the plan didn't work out so well. But it doesn't matter how good your plan is if your authors aren't up to the task of whatever it is. You know, Timothy Zahn is a perfect example even of how in different times in a writer's career or the approaches they take, it can make a big difference. Amazing Thrawn trilogy. I can't stand his more recent stuff. Again, reading it just because it's on the timeline. It really just sort of depends on who you get, when you catch them, which is why I actually admire Kevin J. Anderson, Michael Stackpole, and some of these guys who've said at some point, look, for now I'm done with Star Wars because I just don't feel like I have more of that story to tell right now. And when the next time came up for an opportunity, they kind of said, well, we're bowing out gracefully, especially Michael Stackpole, who really was kind of leaving at the top of his game. I mean, the guy had been doing the X-Wing comic series, the X-Wing novels that are very critically acclaimed, and it wasn't like he was leaving on a down note. It wasn't like people were wanting to see him gone.
Yeah, but he wrote Koran out of the New Jedi Order there for a little bit, and I was like, what? No! And he's leaving! No! No! Somebody's going to bring Koran back! I was freaking out!
I mean, but that's what you need. I mean, you need somebody who can invent some emotion. You need somebody who can write a solid story, but it seems like there's more to it. It's the old thing about what I tell my students. If you're writing a continuity and change over time essay for the AP World History exam, then try to approach a given point that's supposed to be about what's changed and what stayed the same and the rationale behind it, have a structure. Talk about the beginning, the middle, and the end of the period of change, why it happened, and then what's the continuity, what's the through line of what stayed the same despite the changes around it. You can argue history, and you can go at it from all kinds of different angles, but in order to be understood, in order for your audience to be able to appreciate the point you're trying to make, you must have a structure. And the same thing works when you're dealing with fiction. You know, some people can do the random fiction that feels like it's just coming off the top of your head in its flow of thought. Chuck, however you pronounce his name, who wrote Fight Club, Palahniuk or whatever, is real good at that flow of thought kind of thing. But it doesn't necessarily work for everyone. And you need that solid plan, which makes me wonder who at what point deals with the planning stage and how critical are they about what gets through? Because, you know, Dark Nest, I didn't like it. I'm sure some people out there loved it. You know, like, bugs! Yes, I love bugs! Maybe there are people who loved it and they're cool with the idea. It was great that it got greenlit. But, you know, you take something like, for instance, with Path of Destruction, somebody had to greenlight the idea that it could just steamroll over parts of Jedi vs. Sith. Now, somebody has to greenlight each of these books. I wrote a 14-page story for Star Wars Tales. 14 stinking pages. That's it out of, what, a 64 or whatever it is, page comic? Okay, yeah. It's one comic story out of three in a series of 24 issues. It's teeny tiny. It's a blip in all of Star Wars publishing. And you know what? That plot synopsis, that original pitch, had to go through me, Jeremy Barlow, he and I going back and forth on it several times. It goes all the way up to Lucasfilm. I think it was Jonathan Renzler, I forget, who would have to be the one to actually approve the synopsis. That goes back down the chain of command to me once he and Jeremy deal with some stuff. Then I do the actual writing. And the writing goes from me to Jeremy on up for approvals from Lucasfilm, et cetera, et cetera. And if there were big continuity concerns in there, those questions would have gone to Leland Chee. There is a structure in place that is supposed to keep track of these types of things and make sure that it's going to live up to the Star Wars name, make sure that everything fits, make sure that everything has a structure to it that's going to give us the type of story that will not be a bestseller because it has Star Wars' name on the cover, but it'll be a bestseller because it actually grabs people's attention. That if you change the character to something that wasn't Star Wars and it's a generic space fantasy, people will still buy it and still like it because it's a good book. But it seems like, you know, sometimes quality control starts to slip. It almost feels like not as bad. But you take Star Wars publishing and the fact that sometimes these plans, these best laid plans, don't seem to be working. And there's a lot of this on the fly kind of, well, we don't quite know who the guy is at the end of Apocalypse. We'll just figure it out later. Or we don't quite know what Abalos' origin is exactly. We'll figure it out in the middle of writing the series. It reminds me
of one of those where, oh, we've canceled Blood Oath, so we're going to add a lot of extra little stuff because you guys complained that Omen was so short.
Right, that kind of thing. It makes me wonder. If it goes on this path and nothing corrects it, and I think them going to less books in a series, maybe their attempt to correct that sort of eyes are bigger than your stomach kind of thing when it comes to the writing aspect of it. You know, the plans are bigger than what they're really ready to implement. It feels to me like Nintendo. And Nintendo for a long time had that Nintendo seal of quality. You knew if you were buying a game on the original Nintendo or Super Nintendo, generally that it was a good game. It wasn't a piece of crap. And now you've got the Wii, and the Wii is full of shovelware, as they call it. All these mini-game, broken, screwed up, little let's make money off the casual gamer, even if the game sucks type of things being put out that people are buying because, hey, it's on the Wii. Hey, it's something I can play with my family, even if it's garbage.
I was blown away by some of those Wii games and how short they were. I was like, really? Three levels? That's it? What the heck?
Yeah, so there's a level at which quality control, I mean, it's kind of a cliche term these days to refer, oh, quality control. I mean, that can refer to anything. But yeah, quality control is important on every level. You know, the writer has to be good. The planning has to be good. The way it fits in with continuity, if they're going to be caring about that, has to be well done. You have to have a level of, I want to say excellence on every level in order to get an excellent product. I mean, having an excellent writer but a poor editor might be something where one can help balance out the other. But as fast-paced as Star Wars publishing is, as many people as are writing at any given time, as this universe keeps expanding and expanding with all the different levels that already exist to it, from the standpoint of depth and characterization and all these planets, you know, it's like as it grows, they got to keep upping their game as they go along. You know, at first they're juggling just a couple of balls. Now they're juggling thousands of balls if you count all the comics, all the characters. You know, they got to stay at the high point. And I think that with Fate of the Jedi, we had an example of that starting to break down. Some of the balls they were juggling started to fall onto the ground and get chased under the couch by the dog, you know?
Well, I got 2 points real fast. Okay, first one is, I think of the Bantam era days, and we had a lot of trilogies, a lot of singles, duologies, and that nature. But the main thing we had was the villain of the week. It was like everybody was an Imperial Moff, and they had some reason why they had to take down the New Republic. And it kind of almost felt like, to a varying degree, you had the same type of villains battling the same good guys for almost the same thing. Book after book after book. And so I don't want to see him fall into that. But I do, you know, like you said, you know, maybe by going to a smaller thing, that's the way they're going to do the stopgap and fix this. But how many large book series have we got before Return of the Jedi? All I can think of are ones post Return of the Jedi. And, you know, it's like, why don't they say in the Tor era, especially, do a 9-book series right there? I mean, I really kind of bummed that they see, you know, because I'm with you. I still liked Legacy of the Force and Fate of the Jedi, despite things that I may complain about on occasion. I really did like the story overall. But a lot of people, you know, they didn't, and it seems to be that those people have influenced the way the publishing company is coming, and they're flat out saying, no, we're done. And that doesn't sit well with me, because I want to say my favorite book series have been these long ones, especially the ones that are a little more well thought out than the others. And I really think, like, you know, by saying, no, we're done with it altogether, I think that's a mistake, especially when you've got such a large timeline. And I'm looking at the Tor era especially here, where you can really flesh out some great stuff if you just set some people down, let them brainstorm, and don't rush them into writing the books. Just let them work on it a little bit. I mean, look what Lucino did with Darth Plagueis with that extra time. I mean, that book was so interconnected. It was insane.
You know, and you don't even necessarily, if you were to go back to sort of a Bantam style of things, you know, where you've got the 3 books and the 1 book and that sort of thing, where it does feel like it's a villain of the week type of thing, you can create something like that that, in a sense, yeah, sure, it's, you know, a trilogy or whatever, but you can build something with that. You know, you might have, I'm blanking on an example of this, but I've seen
it done in comic books.
Don't know what I'm going to say, though.
It's the Bothan, right? What's his name?
What?
Drovus Nuts. He become the president later.
No. No.
Those characters he just throws? Oh.
No. Just the you need, you could have a through line, but have it be one that you don't realize is there yet. I guess Dresden Files kind of does this. You know, they feel like one-off adventures. They feel like individual trilogies. But once you get to, say, you know, like, say we've got 2 years of Star Wars publishing, 3 years of Star Wars publishing, and there's trilogies and trilogies and some duologies, only you realize after the first couple trilogies have finished, holy crap, the mastermind behind all this was the guy that's now showing up in this brand new hardback. There was more to the story than we realized, and they've been laying these little bits and pieces, these little connect-the-dots type dots that we didn't realize were there, but now we see them clear as day, and now it's all put together. Holy crap, it's all connected, man, and you start feeling like you're Kiefer Sutherland with his kid on TV.
Yeah.
That's
well,
what we
need. See, I was thinking more of the villain side of things, like, you know, where Boris Fehle, you know, he was a character that, like, he was there and he just kind of rubbed you wrong. And then the next book, he really rubbed you wrong. And then he rubbed you wrong some more. And then, like, 40 more books of him rubbing you wrong. And then you get to the New Jedi Order and you're just like, oh, good, this guy's, like, he almost became a villain in a sense. And then you would have, like, Namor, who, you know, was... Like you're saying in this case, you know, he was just like a little character here, but then he becomes a big player later. And, you know, he was just like so well done. That's what I'm missing is characters like Namor, Boris Fehle, that just are there, that just get under your skin. You just want them to die, and they don't. And you're just like, come on, to die already.
You know, in that case, though, I don't think there was but there wasn't much planning with that sort of thing, though. I don't think that... You know, for the years that Star Wars was being published by Bantam, I don't think there was ever any plan, when eventually we get to this point, we're going to make Boris the chief of state. That's where we're going with this. Or you take the character Namor, right? Yeah, Namor was being set up in Crimson Empire 2 briefly so that he could come back as part of that invasion storyline. But you know what? It wasn't even that same invasion storyline. Yeah, he becomes the part of the, was it Praetorit Vong, the Yuuzhan Vong advance force. Yeah, after the idea of an invasion storyline is dropped by Dark Horse, picked up or assigned to Del Rey, and they create a totally different version of an invasion story and then put out their books. Oh yeah, now that Namor, yeah, he's part of our story. But we can't even say that that one was planned out. Yeah, he existed. He was seated there for an invasion story, but not the invasion story that was actually told. He was his concept was essentially retconned into it. I'm talking something where they sit down and they decide behind the scenes, you know, okay, you know, X years from now, this is where this is going to go. This is where we want these characters to be. We're going to tell all these stories, but this is the through line we want to have underneath it so that there is this big novel that's coming. I mean, think about it. That would 35th anniversary, 40th anniversary. Make a big deal out of it. We just hit the 20th anniversary of Heir to the Empire, right? 2011. They've got time to wait until 2016, give us a 25th anniversary of the EU kind of thing, where they've been building for several years with all these little threads, and give us one amazing novel or duology or whatever. Give us a trilogy of hardbacks. We'll buy them at the hardback prices. We promise, if you make them good enough and if you build real anticipation for good stories by laying down threads in the other stuff without making us feel as though if we don't read everything, we're simply screwed.
You know, you're right in the aspect of the way I'm looking at Borisk and Namor. It was a typical George Lucas / EU come together kind of thing where accidents happen and occasionally you get greatness. For me, it's like I those characters really stuck out as like, oh gosh, you know, I really can't stand them, and yet they were always there. And yet later it worked out that big things kind of happened with them. But you're right, it wasn't planned out. And that is something I want to see. I want to see the plan. I like knowing that they're planning these things out. And you're right, when you hear comments like, well, you know, Evelyn, we didn't even know we were book great by the time we were like, hey, let's do this with her. You know, that is a panic moment as a reader. It's like, wait a minute. Why is she even a villain in this case? Just because she's killing everybody? I mean, Jason killed a bunch of people. He wasn't that bad. Oh, wait, no, I guess he was.
And you got to add in, you know, the aspect of improvisation is good. You know, to have a writer be able to sort of find themselves drawn in a different direction. There's the old saying about how a character could speak through an author, or the characters when you're writing, you look and see what the characters do. You listen to the characters and what they say. And it sounds goofy, it sounds cliche, but that's the way the imagination works a lot of times. When writing, you know the personality of the character well enough that you might be writing a scene where you think you know what's going to happen when two characters confront each other, only to realize that the natural response is different. And in your imagination, the character actually surprises you. Maybe it's your subconscious versus your conscious. However you want to break it down psychologically, it can be surprising. So improvisation can be good. But at the same time, there needs to be some level of planning. I'm not saying you got to plan every step, the fate of every single character ahead of time. Then nobody can have real suspense and kill off a character because who knows, you know, oh, sorry, you can't kill off this character because they're supposed to be killed three books from now that haven't even been written yet. You know, give yourself at least a little bit of room to improvise. But at the same time, if there's not a plan, don't tell us there is one either. You know, be honest with us. I love Timothy Zahn's whole thing. We always intended for Luke and Mara to get married. Bullcrap! The hell you did! No, you didn't! That's insane! You know, maybe you thought, hey, this would be cool. Maybe other people thought, hey, this would be cool. You cannot tell me that in 1991, or 90, I guess, when he started writing the thing, that they had planned that Mara Jade would someday be Luke's wife. That'd be like saying, you know what? Back in 1976, when Alan Dean Foster wrote the novelization of Star Wars A New Hope and added that line, what's a duck? This was actually foreshadowing to see ducks in Lucas's episode 1 on Naboo. The hell you say?
And somewhere some crafty publisher or publicist is like, ah, that'll get them.
We are going to need a BS level canon at some point for some of the things that we find out about this. You know, I love the fact that they are so great at interacting with the fans. I mean, Facebook, for a long time on the VIP thread on StarWars.com, Star Wars has some of the coolest, nicest authors out there, the most fan-friendly authors, and they really, in a lot of cases, they're really passionate about this stuff. Maybe they don't know all the continuity, but you know what? We're the fans, we take the time to read everything. They're the writers. They've got to be writing. That's their livelihood. It's not like they can read everything that's coming out as it comes out, or they won't ever be able to produce what they want to produce for themselves. But, you know, these are really, really good people. Just, it bothers me, I guess, when it feels like we're not being played straight with, and I think it's probably because it's the... It doesn't bother me as much when politicians don't play straight. You know, I'm like, yeah, big surprise. He's trying to get elected. Right? But I guess I expect such good things out of this community of writers and editors and everyone because they've been so friendly. It's been such a great experience. In most cases, I did have one crazy artist guy go off just on a rant that maybe say, forget it, and no more contact with this guy, even on Facebook. But for the vast majority of these people, I mean, these are people who... You know, if you could sit down and just have a drink with them, have dinner with them, you know, they are nice people. Yeah. And they play it straight with you as much as they can. There are things they can't tell you about books that are coming up that'll give away secrets. But, you know, that's the publishing business. That's just the way it is. When they don't seem like they're playing straight with us, that's when it bothers me. And I guess that's because it proves the rule. It's the same thing as the fan films. You know, when Lucasfilm actually looks at a fan film and says, don't do that. That's a shock to us because usually they're cool with it and they are very supportive of fan films. Lucasfilm, and we're blessed as a community. So sometimes when it feels like, you know, the serpent is creeping in, if to go with the blessing, I guess, analogy here, you know, it unnerves us more than anything else. The spotlight, in a sense, winds up falling on it. We realize that these are just, you know, people too, and sometimes people will try to cover their butts with spin? Yeah, that's what it is. It's not a lie. It's spin. Of course, Mara was always destined to be Luke's wife. Don't worry. It was all planned ahead of time. And Lucas, he knew that Greedo was going to show up as a pudgy little Rodian kid and get wailed on and wail on Anakin. He knew that back whenever he was first writing the drafts for Episode 4. When he sits down at his desk in the documentary for Episode 1 on the DVD, and the first day of writing the script for Episode 1, he sits down and he says, all I need is an idea. Doesn't mean he really needs an idea. He means I need to know which of the millions I've already decided upon I need to pull out of the filing cabinet. That's all he meant.
I remember panicking when I saw that. What do you mean I need an idea? You know, it's something that I've slowly myself kind of come to. I couldn't stand the term when it first came out, the Geno. We've talked about it before. It's a concept I really don't like, but I have to understand where these fans that refer to Jason as Geno, Jason in name only, where they're coming from. And I think, you know, you mentioned earlier about authors getting in and knowing certain characters, and I think that's kind of like what I think these people that are upset about the Geno character come from. Because up until Dark Nest, you had this feeling like Jason was going to evolve and become something new, something bigger and better than the Jedi. And yet Dark Nest come and you're like, okay, well, he's right now he's a rogue Jedi. All right, okay, I'm along for the ride. And then the next series comes out and it's like, no, he's just a bad guy. And it's like, wait a minute here. We just went through this long struggle with this kid. And you're going to tell us that he's going to forget everything. I mean, and I'm looking at ways to go, okay, well, yeah. I mean, how many times did I mess up at growing up and do the same mistake and told myself I'm not going to do it again? I went right back out and did it again. I mean, so I'm trying to find ways to, you know, make it in my mind work. And yet I can see where they're going from in the aspect of here you have a character that's been working towards something, a goal, and then all of a sudden he just seems derailed. And that's what you hear a lot of people talk about with Jason, especially come, you know, his turn to the dark side. It was a total character derailment. And that's the aspect of the planning that I would like them to pay more attention to. I guess I don't care how big the series is going to be. I just want you to plan that sucker well, you know, have it well thought out, you know. Don't be making it up as you go along, because in Star Wars, it's never going to last well. You're going to be losing bits and pieces of your story, because it's just the way it works, man. It drives me nuts. I don't know.
Yeah, if you're going to find some sense of peace and stability, you know, in Star Wars sometimes, it's kind of like the same kind of peace we got from World War I, which was referred to from the Treaty of Versailles, referred to as a peace built on quicksand. You know, it's always going to shift underneath your feet. And I think we could probably go on and on and on this topic. We're probably going to have to break some little topics of this off and come back to it on a later show. But folks, we are getting real close to our end time so that, you know, Middle Earth Network Radio can actually air this sucker. So we're going to have to call it here. Let us know what you think. The contact information was at the head of the show, Star Wars Beyond the Films, Facebook, Twitter, and so forth. Be sure to catch us for our next episode. And for now, this has been Nathan P. Butler.
Mark Herleman. And Whistler, of course.
And may the Force be with you.
And don't quote us the odds. Because we really don't care.
I care. I am one of your hosts, Nathan P. Butler, on this Expanded Universe podcast. With me on an Expanded Universe podcast, it is perfectly... How do you like that? How do you like that mess up? And now I may have to push the cat out of the room.